On April the 11th, 1928, the finishing touches were being put to the starting of what was deemed at the time an impossible journey. It was a journey to put Ireland, and indeed one Irishman, in the records of aviation history. Of course, that Irishman was Colonel James Fitzmaurice. And Colonel James Fitzmaurice was the first Irishman to fly the first non-stop westward flight by an aeroplane over the Atlantic. As I said, took place on April the 12th, 13th, 1928 by the German Captain Hermann Kohl and Baron Gunther von Hunfield and Captain James Fitzmaurice, an Irishman. Now, they flew from Dublin to Greenlee Island, Labrador, a distance of 3,564 kilometres, 2,215 miles. Of course, crossing the Atlantic was by no mean feat at this stage, and indeed it was done practically a year before that by that famous aviator, American aviator Charles A. Lindbergh. He flew from New York to Paris, a distance of 5,810 kilometres, that's 3,610 miles, covered in 33 hours on May the 20th, the 21st, 1927. And that was just practically a year before Captain Fitzmaurice decided to fly against the prevailing wind. Now, at the time, in 1927, Charles Lindbergh, as I said, had become the first man to cross the Atlantic solo from west to east, dismissed any suggestion that the reverse journey could be safely completed. Now, according to the American aviator, flying westward across the Atlantic into the teeth of the prevailing winds was the Everest of aviation, he described it at the time, a virtually impossible feat. But less than a year later, on April the 12th, 1928, three men were to prove him wrong. In their all-metal, one-engined Junkers W-33 called Bremen, Fitzmaurice and the two Germans flew from Baldonnell Aerodrome in Dublin, where the Irishman was officer in command, to the icy wastes of Greenlee Island, Newfoundland. Now, the whole journey, I'm told, took 36 and a half hours, but it earned the crew a ticker tape parade down the New York's Fifth Avenue and a place in history. It was a lead story in the New York Times for 19 days in a row, and the flight was the equivalent of today's terms in a moon landing. Of course, overnight, Fitzmaurice was a legend, feted by statesmen and royalty. We go now to report, in fact we're going right back in time, back to a report from a reporter from the New York Evening Graphic.
New York Evening Graphic, Thursday, April 12th, 1928. Report from Baldonnell Aerodrome, Dublin, Ireland. Two Germans and a laughing Irishman today attempted a flight that no man before has ever accomplished, a westward crossing of the North Atlantic. At 5:30 a.m. today, the trim gray monoplane Bremen glided down the broad runway at Baldonnell Field and started towards Mitchell Field, Long Island, or heaven. In it were Baron Gunther von Hunefeld, Captain Hermann Kohl, and Commandant James Fitzmaurice of the Irish Free State Air Force. The plane passed out to sea over Costello Bay at 7.05 a.m. It was performing perfectly, but visibility was poor. The Bremen, it was estimated, was going at 75 miles per hour, and it had made the 110 miles between Dublin and Costello Bay in 1 hour and 27 minutes. Within 36 hours, they hoped to be in New York, the first flyers to accomplish a feat that in the past 15 months has baffled four attempts.
Yes, indeed, and from what we heard of that report there, indeed it was a journey to put Ireland, and indeed one laughing Irishman, in the records of aviation history. A time that's often forgotten, and indeed a chap that's often forgotten, Captain Fitzmaurice. The event took place 70 years ago on this date. We now turn our attention to a local man, Mr. Charlie Flavin from Ballintowsig Inch, who can vividly recall that time with startling clarity.
Well, I have the memory of it. It happened during the Easter holidays. And I, listening to the news occasionally, would heard about this flight. And I was always interested in pioneer flights and things that way. It was of tremendous interest to me at the time.
Deemed at the time a virtual impossible task to do.
Well, so it was, because several other attempts had failed. Some of them survived, more of them were never again seen. Three or four attempts. There was about five lives lost, at least, before this particular flight.
Was there?
Yeah.
I see.
Yeah.
But looking back into this, Charlie, I suppose at the time there was a tremendous amount of anticipation, and this thing, I suppose, was well publicised in the papers.
Well, fairly well, yeah.
At the time. And it was a tremendous feat, we'll say, for Captain Fitzmaurice to actually go this journey against the prevailing wind. After all, Lindbergh told him that it was an impossible feat to do.
Exactly.
You know?
You see, in those days you couldn't fly above the storm. You'd need pressurised cabins and all the rest, you know, but you had to fly right into it and take what you got.
And
in their case, they got it pretty severe.
Did they?
But survived.
Yes, yes. I seem to recall you telling me the preparations at one time that went on before the actual flight. In fact, there was cases of spark plugs arrived over from Germany.
Oh, so there were, yeah.
Yes.
There were... The mechanics that came over with it brought seven gross of spark plugs, and they never changed any of them.
Didn't they?
The Irish air lads that were there in Baldon asked them, wouldn't they change the air? They said, no need whatever, it was running perfectly, you see. So presumably the Irish Air Force got the benefit of all those spark plugs after. It was the Junkers plane, yeah.
Yes.
And they called it the Bremen.
The Bremen.
So, anyway, I was on the alert once I knew the flight was taking place, but communication in those days was very, very sparse compared with nowadays.
I can imagine.
And I had to rely on BBC, the Daventry, the high power station at Daventry, and there was the Eiffel Tower in France.
Yes.
And there was Hilversum in Holland. They were all in the long wave bands. And this Deutschlandsender had just started up to the high power station too. And I was relying on anything I could might sift out of what they'd be saying, you see.
Yes.
And I got it eventually. I could hear mention of Greenlee Island, and I knew that it had some significance in this case, you see.
I see.
So I also got on the BBC that they had eventually, after a very turbulent journey over, safely landed on Greenlee Island. You know, it was very, very uncomfortable, I would think, for 36 hours in that, you know,
yes.
Exposed to the weather, you could say, completely.
It's a thing that's often forgotten about.
Oh, it has been. That's what I was afraid of, that there would be no commemoration of this which, momentous event in Irish history. And an Irish flying history.
Baldonnel Aerodrome was the only aerodrome, I suppose, in the country at the time.
It was probably the only aerodrome. I remember reading that reporters out from Dublin, a lot of pilot reporters out on their bicycles. That was the usual mode of conveyance in those days.
I would imagine so.
Yeah.
I would imagine so. But yet, for weeks afterwards, I suppose, the excitement that prevailed. The papers, I suppose, were full of it for months on end.
Oh, they were.
You know?
You see, but I lost a lot of that because I had to go back to college again, you see.
Nowadays, as we said, he's largely forgotten about. And I think he came to an untimely end or something. Didn't he die in 1965?
He did. And he somehow never got any great recognition for what he had done.
Yes.
Because, as I said, he was the principal navigator there.
Yes.
Captain Baron von Hunnefeldt was terminally ill. He supplied the money.
Oh, it was actually...
And he had no active part in the flight at all.
It was actually a private venture, so...
It was. But Fitzmaurice had to get special permission from the Irish Air Force to fly. But the point was that they really took their lives in their hands. They had no modern, technique or no nothing available to them, not even the radio, which is very strange, because... Alcock and Brown had flown across from Newfoundland,
yes,
and landed in Galway in 1919.
I see.
And they had radio.
They had radio?
They had.
I see.
It was a converted Vickers Vimy bomber.
Yes.
And there were two Rolls-Royce engines, you know.
I see.
But this, the Junkers was just one engine.
Yes. And of course, as you say, halfway over across the Atlantic, the last thing I suppose the Germans wanted was a spark plug to go, so they sent over a gross of them.
Oh, indeed.
Yeah.
Someone said to me one time, I'd prefer, he said, to be in a car, you could always get out and change the plug.
But there is great credit due to the three, and it wasn't.
Oh, tremendous.
Especially.
My great admiration for anyone doing pioneering work. Trailblazers,
yes.
I call them.
Well, I suppose they were classed as trailblazers at the time.
Oh, they were, surely.
You know?
Were.
That time, Charlie, too, I suppose, the news of the Titanic sinking a couple of years before that in 1912, and indeed the Lusitania in 1917, was still sending shockwaves around the world.
Oh, so you're quite right.
You know?
You're quite right. Yeah. But in the there was a rescue, they had to be rescued off Greenly Island, you see.
Oh, did they?
And tragically, there was a great German or American air pilot lost his life in that search.
Was there?
His name was Floyd Bennett. And he was pilot to Admiral Byrd 2 years previously in their flight over the North Pole.
Oh,
the
I
first
see.
Flight over the North Pole.
I see.
And he was a first-class pilot.
Yes.
Admiral Byrd was the navigator.
Yes.
But it was very sad, like, that he lost his life.
It was, really.
But I understand there's some airport in America called after him in his memory. Airport.
I see, yeah. I see. But the three lads had to be rescued from their
mission.
They
had to be rescued, yeah.
They were
on an island.
Yes, on Greenly Island.
And the place was frozen, you know. It was severely cold, even though it was early into April.
Yes,
how cold it is at the moment here.
Yes, of course, you can well imagine. Of course,
you can imagine what it was. But they were blown northwards. You see, they aimed to go to New York, but the wind blew them.
Yes.
Northward, and it was in Labrador, they landed, you know, an island off Labrador.
Yes, I see. Mm. And they were there for a spell, so, before they got
rescued.
Well,
they were, several days.
I see. Well, Charlie, thank you very much for producing a fascinating insight into, I suppose, times gone by, and
yes,
indeed remembering, you know, that famous flight that took place nearly 70 years ago.